some kind of chemical reactions going on. We got our intro music right there.
Hello, everyone. I am Kyle Montgomery. I'm here with
Cooper Carr
and Neil Anderson.
This is episode 14 of the Cinepile podcast, and we have a special episode for y'all tonight. All of our episodes are special, let's be honest.
But which kid do you love the most?
This one is very near and dear to my heart, though, because I love both of these films. One of these films is Kyle. It's kind of the child of the other.
It's kind of like Kyle.
It's kind of like Kyle. Gosh, if only that were true.
Integrity.
I inspire to these films. One of them is last year's Best Picture winner. With the Academy Awards approaching, we thought it would be appropriate to visit last year's Best Picture winner, which was Spotlight. Something Cooper and Neil hadn't actually seen up until we prepared to research for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we paired Spotlight with the quintessential investigative journalism film, All the President's Men. There's a lot of similarities, a couple differences, but we're going to break them both down and see why they register so well with their audience. What is it about these movies that just brings us in?
Well, the funny thing is we initially were thinking about doing a political film episode, mm-hmm. with, you know, the inauguration and Trump becoming president. This idea was a little while ago, obviously, when the inauguration happened, but we watched All the President's Men and realized that the direction we wanted to go wasn't a political episode anymore. We thought pairing it with another journalistic or like a process movie, mm-hmm. was better. So yeah, we paired it with Spotlight.
Yeah, because originally I had wanted to pair it with Oliver Stone's Nixon, which is one of my personal all-time favorite movies. But Spotlight is such a better combination.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the beauty of these films, part of the beauty of these lone wolf journalists and what they represent is that they're apolitical.
Right. They're isolated from politics. You don't see any politics in All the President's Men except for on television.
Yeah, it's kind of like the monks of the modern era, you know. You know, they can, like, because journalists are supposed to walk this, like, weirdly pure line of, like, you know, I can't reveal a source, this is on and off the record. They have a lot of morals that dictate stuff, whether or not they should or shouldn't reveal something. You know, it's a profession that still has that core of integrity to it, that it can't be, you know, it has to maintain itself as being unflappable. Other words, it just becomes cataclysmic.
It's a self-regulated estate of the government. But right, it's
the fourth,
like,
estate.
It's the fourth estate that isn't regulated the same way, obviously, as the other three are, you know, with like lawyers, integrity, and what they can do, like what you were just saying, like revealing sources and stuff. And it's like, well, I can't reveal my source, you know, but that's internal, like,
mm-hmm. And thankfully, it's also protected.
Right.
So to take it even a step further, one of the fine lines that they really have to walk in our modern day political climate is the opinion piece. It needs to be unbiased.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, well, today it's much different than what it was.
Opinions are facts.
During All the President's Men, right?
Yeah,
during the 70s.
It's very different. And with the proliferation of all these opinion pieces and talking heads, it really is a problem to tell some of these things apart. And that is kind of why it's even more valuable now.
And this, honestly, what we're talking about kind of goes hand in hand with the network, too, a little bit, and how this kind of happened to news.
Where becomes entertainment.
Where you're fighting others for ratings.
The network of the HBO show?
No, the Sidney Lumet film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the 1970s.
Oh, that's the newsroom.
I don't know what year. Sorry. Yeah, not newsroom. The network Yeah, it's like the black comedy.
Oh,
it's...
right. Okay. Sorry, I totally forgot about that.
Newsroom does kind of go hand in hand with this as well, though, does, if y'all watch that, because it's way more on the nose and cinematic about it, kind of to a fault.
Yeah, it's a little more austere, but that's kind of...
Well, less. It's less austere. All the President's Men and these kind of things are austere. They're like unflappable. They don't make things dramatic. They just let them speak for themselves.
Yeah, the movies themselves are like journalism. You know, they're documentary. They're narratives. They're not documentaries, but they are meant to feel real. Like even the color doesn't draw attention to itself, right? They don't. Mm-hmm. Like you don't. A documentary is not something you color grade heavily, right? You kind of take the realness out of it. Mm-hmm. And these films were the same way. Tom Poole colored Spotlight and it looked great. And honestly, that kind of look is almost more difficult than a very stylized look. But it was very neutral. It was very... Mm-hmm. You didn't draw attention to itself.
Right? No, it didn't. But it still, everything looked good.
Beautiful shade of beige.
Yeah,
it was very beige.
Yeah, it was like, but it was beige. I mean, I think Kyle said it was more so golden at some times. But it was, you know, red, green, blue, and beige. That was like the thematic motifs of everything. But never
heavy.
Well,
never like... They were taking muted. Your eye off of what the story was.
No, yeah, it was always like in the background.
It was always to the point. Like, that like, what you saw on screen was what you were supposed to see.
Right, like,
what you were...
like a dish towel would be blue.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't know, I thought they did such a great job of maintaining the thematic colors overall for it. And I don't know, and it just... it was like how we were talking about the last... What was it? When we were talking about La La Land and how it's so great because everything works together so well in concert, even though it's on that, you know... that redlining kind of level.
Very
and,
saturated.
Yeah, and just bombastic like quality of film. Like that would definitely be La La Land. This is like that subtle, like maintaining drone that is like beautiful and consistent. And that's what I really liked about Spotlight. And then also Mark Ruffalo, extremely good job with acting. Batman did a wonderful job too. Still Seeking Justice is wonderful. I mean, took a back seat. I don't know why people didn't understand.
Birdman. He's Birdman now.
He's everything.
I know he is, but he's Birdman to me now.
And to further Kyle's point.
Let's talk about the characters.
Yeah, to further Kyle's point when talking about, remind me, what is that actor's name one more time? Because I'm going to talk about him.
Michael Keaton,
thank you. So when Keaton is... so many times just reeling back Mark Ruffalo. He's like, no, we got to go. We got to protect these kids. We got to let the whole people know that this is a problem. And Keaton's character had enough, you know, coolness to go, no, that's not how journalism is done. Like, yeah, you're wanting to win the battle. I'm trying to win the war. Let's take down the whole system. Let's do this by the books. Let's be smart about it. Let's cross all our T's, dot all our I's. And that's what was really great to watch, that it wasn't something that was just this, you know, reactionary, you know, instinctual kick of, you know, trying to get like that quickest satisfaction. It was, no, I'm going to be a tactician and bring down everything. And it made the ending so much more rewarding rather than, you know, obviously what Mark Ruffalo's conclusion wanted to be for the movie. But
the whole cast
and the whole were great.
Yeah, I think talking about characters is probably a good idea now. In general, if we start with Spotlight, they were, in general, almost perfect human beings. Like, in the movie, for what we saw them. We don't see their private lives almost at all. You get a couple glimpses. But for the most part...
The glimpses you do get are... in a way cliche, but they're also honest because they just dedicate themselves to their work.
Right.
So their personal lives are always taking the back
secondary.
Seat. Just like in the story. Maybe you do get some glimpses or some details here and there. Maybe she's married. Maybe somebody's divorced.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what defines them as people.
Right. In this movie, they're defined by their practically ideals, what we were saying before, right? They're like bigger, they're almost larger than humans, right? Yeah. They represent virtues,
ideals,
that we all should, you know, hope for in journalism and, you know, strive for, like, in general as people, for seeking truth and seeking facts
stopping injustice.
And yes, exactly. They're heroes, basically.
Yeah, they are heroes. Mm-hmm. And if you were to go to any character building school or blog, they're all going to tell you, and for the most part, or they're usually right about this, they're going to tell you that your character needs a flaw. In Mark Ruffalo's case, he's the only one that really comes to mind for me. His flaw is impatience.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go ahead with the story, even if it's what his intentions are honorable. He doesn't see the bigger picture in that moment because he's so impassioned.
I was going to say impassioned, maybe more than impatient. It's just more like whereas like Michael Keaton is almost like the veteran.
Yeah,
he's the experience that's like...
The old breed.
He's the old breed, right?
I've got a question, though.
Yeah.
How much of Michael Keaton's reserve came from himself? Granted, he is a veteran. His character is a veteran, and this person is a veteran in journalism.
Not actually a veteran, but like, veteran. Yeah,
in journalism. But Liev Schreiber's turn as their actual boss was just amazing. His best performance ever.
He was a leader.
He was so understated and just so... Like,
so perfect.
So strong.
He is the one who plants that seed of... We're going to take down the system.
Right.
And I think him being that perfect leader, that sunk in with the Spotlight's boss, Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And that, in my mind, that's where that came from. When he thought about it, he was like, no, we're going after the bigger fish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's kind of beautiful to see that.
Everyone is like, they were the idealistic version of who you want them to be.
Yeah,
and who we like should be and who we want. And it like... And it came together to make this story happen that broke, you know?
So one thing that I was like looking at with Mark Ruffalo's character when I was watching it was that getting into was he being impatient or not being impassioned on that topic, I was really expecting, and I'm not sure if the filmmakers wanted to go with it, that he too was also sexually molested. That's what I felt like at first when he was... just like yelling at Keaton's character, like when he was like, you know, like, we know we've got to print it now. And he like started crying and like, you know, you can see like how much he wants to defend people. And I was expecting a little bit in the movie that that would lead into more revealing with his character. But I thought like the characters seem so like crazily impassioned or something like that would have to be some kind of catalyst for him. But it wasn't, and
it would be if it was a piece of fiction.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
So there's a brilliant character. We keep calling them characters, but they're real life people. And a lot of this from what I've read is very true to real life. There's this attorney who is always fighting this uphill battle. He's been doing it for years to try to make the church accountable to its victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Mark Ruffalo, when he was on the verge, it was like just like Michael Keaton took that gem from his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Ruffalo, the journalist, saw the damage and what the attorney was fighting for. And it was like, as a journalist, he took a little bit of their pain, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that he had faces to put to the, you know, to the battle and to the injustice.
Yeah, and he was on the front lines too with a lot of it, and I think that's why he was the most like rattled out of everyone else, because he revealed even that he had a lot taken from him in a spiritual way when he was talking with Sasha, the one woman character. I forgot the actress's name, but the
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams. Yeah, yeah, Rachel McAdams. Yeah, she was portraying a character.
Solid performance as well, all around.
Yeah, I liked Rachel McAdams' character, and you know, they had excellent chemistry. Just everyone had chemistry on the entire movie. The only thing I didn't really ever see much was that one guy who had the mustache. I thought he was kind of a meh character. He was kind of a satellite for most of it. But I don't. But still, it's not like he did a terrible job. He just didn't. Probably time is a factor nonetheless. He can't have his bit.
Well, I can't remember what was that that lawyer's name, because he was kind of like an unsung hero kind of thing also, right? He also embodied an ideal of like this tireless grind of almost a thankless fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the people that he's fighting for are thankful, but he's not getting like recognition, and the even the papers don't really even know about the guy, right?
Like, no, they can't to an extent. His cases are still ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they want to bring... They do want to put a bit of a spotlight on him. But not specifically. It's like, yeah, he is that unsung hero. He's even more of a hero in many ways.
He's alone.
The journalist. Yeah, he's alone. He's working on this. And it's like Sisyphus. You're fighting the church. You're fighting the Vatican. And all of the power that they can bring.
Yeah, what did he say? He was like, the Vatican thinks in centuries.
Yeah.
Like, do you have the time to mm-hmm. fight them? Kind of thing. I was like, yeah. Oh, that's a good line.
Yeah.
So his character's name was Mitchell Garabedian, and it was played by Stanley Tucci.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Also solid.
Oh, yeah, Stanley Tucci's always a really good actor. But he reminded me very much so of the Night of, and just like that lawyer kind of character, the lawyer who doesn't give up, or that social worker who
I'm
doesn't give
up. I'm drawing
a
blank on his name.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank a little bit with that. But the that ideal and kind of getting back to it, to where, you know, you went into his office and it was chaos, you know, stacked papers and everything like that.
Yeah.
He lived his job, and his job defined who he was wholly and fully. And but he came out as the outlier. That was the only reason why he was able to put a spotlight onto the actual issue, because he was like, hey, I'm the like only Armenian in Boston. And he's like, so I'm the only person who can see this, who's not really scared or affected by the church and everything like that. So that was also something that it's important to show, that you always need that kind of outsider perspective in order to self-examine mm-hmm. many times. And so that was a good theme that they had throughout it.
Yeah. So they repeated that. The whole reason they're on this story is because of the new editor, mm-hmm. Liev Schreiber, who is playing Marty Baron. And he's a Jew in Boston.
Uh-oh.
Which is, yeah, it's a Catholic town.
Right.
And the lawyer's line at one point is, it takes a village. If it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a village to abuse one.
Yes.
They don't see the story because they're so close to this system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a part of their lives, and they're not able to accurately see it for what it is.
Yeah. Well, and even when Keaton's character is being leaned on by the one person from the church.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, you know, he's not from this town, you know? He's like, he's just a Jewish guy who's coming through just trying to make his mark. He doesn't care about us.
And he's going
to
leave.
Yeah, and he's just going to leave. He's like, and then you're not going to leave. What's going to happen to you? Like, this kind of like creepy assassination, like wink, wink, nudge, nudge
kind of
thing.
Yeah, it was a total threat.
Oh, a total threat, yeah. And
a friendly threat.
But I think it was a very quiet game of chess between two massive powers that dictate everything about most levels of society, the church and journalism. I'd say that journalism, as far as like estates go, like it is also its own, it's its own country, literally, in some places.
But very isolated.
Very right? isolated.
So, but when we're talking about big powers, like this was just a newspaper in one town taking on.
Well, did you see the credits?
The Catholic Church.
Yeah, we all saw the credits.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's like not like the entire world of journalism was fighting, you know, the Catholic Church.
Okay,
it was
yeah.
just it's a group of people.
It is just one group of people.
Yeah.
And what's shocking is, yeah, at the end of the credits, they show you how many cities this took place in. You only needed that one group of people to stand up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then because you see it there, you can extrapolate and see that people realize this isn't just Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Old Boston.
But
so to go back to, we were talking a little bit about the style being so natural. Music plays a very little role. And part of the reason I think we don't need so many character flaws, we don't need this excess drama that kind of is like one of the pitfalls of the newsroom, is that the subject matter itself is just so full of drama. When you hear abuse victims telling their story, it's so easy to make it melodramatic. And I think they toe that line really well, where it's not melodramatic.
Mm-hmm. And it goes hand in hand with being kind of a documentary, right? Like, if you're hearing music in something that's actually happening, it has to be diegetic or something, you know, like it can't, it has to be in the world.
Mm-hmm. And so All the President's Men and this film, for the most part, there are exceptions to this, but they kind of reserve the music for montages.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
There's such a huge emphasis placed on the voice and dialogue that the music would be a distraction. You know, except in these sequences where we're just taking us from one place to the other, showing them doing the legwork, going from house to house,
mm-hmm.
encountering Bostonians, or in the case of All the President's Men, they're going around to all the different lower level staffers in the White House or in the RNC who might have been involved.
Just thinking about this, this is kind of a going back to characters a little bit. Not that it's a difference between the characters, but like a little bit of how they're portrayed and how the story is unfolded. Where in Spotlight, it's almost like them just like lifting over every stone kind of thing to find out the facts, to uncover the story. Where with All the President's Men, it's almost just like persistence, like constantly doing the same thing to get an answer from some, you know, like they're just way more tenacious in a way.
Mm-hmm.
In like a, it's less of a cerebral thing and more of like a get someone to talk to you kind of thing.
Yeah, pound the pavement journalism kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's that classic trick that Dustin Hoffman's character mm-hmm. plays.
What's the trick?
Where he calls in to the front lady's desk. He's trying to get in to see that attorney. And he calls her off, tells her to come downstairs and get the paper. No, it's like a judge. He's trying to get access to these documents that he called about, and they're trying to ignore him. And so it's like a little detective deal that he does.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a private detective kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
He calls her, gets her off the desk, sneaks right into the office like he had his meeting all planned. It's like, and there's something that we admire about that, because we wish in our own lives, I'm going to speak for all of us, that we could go after our goals with that kind of tenaciousness
mm-hmm.
and that kind of reckless abandon.
Right. And then that's actually mirrored perfectly in Spotlight, because Mark Ruffalo's character does the exact same thing when he goes to see the lawyer. Because he's sitting there, he's waiting to see the lawyer, waiting to see the lawyer.
He's like, come back.
Come back. And then he's like, no, I'm going to go see you now. And the front desk gal leaves, and then he just pops right in there.
Opens the door, walks in.
And he's like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, you've been ignoring me, and we need to get this done. But I think that's what we want. We want that warrior for truth who has that kind of tireless, just never ending, just that thrum, thrum, thrum of just that tenacious, that tenaciousness that we just so admire. And
yeah,
and then getting through that, just, you know, you break that boulder by a thousand little hits, not with one big mighty one that would be done with a drama. And it shows like, just very slowly, and you're like, oh wow, you weren't destroying it, you were making a beautiful sculpture. That is the truth.
That is the truth. So these films, they do have a bit of a documentary approach, but there are real instances of design, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got a couple signature shots for both of them. Cooper, you had brought up that All the President's Men made bigly use of diopters.
Bigly.
If not the bigliest.
That's our new word, by the way. You're probably going to hear it every
episode. It's not our word.
It's the nation's word. Yeah. So they had that going on. But for me, what I noticed with Spotlight is they kind of did the reverse of All the President's Men. There are a couple instances in All the President's Men where we're moving in. We're just zooming and zooming and zooming into a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
With Spotlight, it's like you'll have this really intense dialogue or something that's happening down in their little tiny separate newsroom, and the camera will just track out.
Mm-hmm.
It'll back up and up and kind of reveal the scope, almost like they're kind of understanding now the actual scope of the story they're covering. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I'm not quite sure. Often with the diopters, it was like we were supposed to look at two things at once, which is really like, that's what a split diopter does.
It was a practical use, it felt like.
Where you could see like a TV monitor in the foreground covering that's one of the few instances where you actually get an idea of the politics of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or, well, and I think what it was, I think what it was also trying to do is, it's so hard in such a large space, such as a newsroom, to observe all the factors and everything like that and how it directly pulls to a character. So like when the TV was going or something like that, or when they're dialing on the phone, that having such a large space, that's, you know, it's impossible to bring how these things are connected. And so it seemed like the diopter was just like the go-to kind of thing to just very tightly keep that while not having to sacrifice abandoning that shot. Because so often in All the President's Men, they try to make shots pretty long. And, I mean, kind of to my dismay sometimes, like, because I get sometimes bored with the shot, but at the same time, I applaud them because it maintained that realism. It maintained that hey, I'm in a newsroom, and I'm watching this process happen, and this is what's going on, and then this happens next. It's like watching a cooking show. It's like, yeah, it's not just it pops out of the oven. There is a process to this. And it made you appreciate their craft. Mm-hmm. In that respect, you walked away with, or I guess you pressed stop with the notion of you understood what it took to get to the finish line, not that they just crossed it. And I think that's what was great about both of those films.
It's so unsexy that it becomes sexy.
Yes, yes.
You gotta respect that.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. It's like confidence in a way. To where it's just like, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm not done up or anything like that, but I know I'm beautiful. Come at me, bro.
Yeah,
I know I'm interesting.
Yeah, exactly. The film knows it's interesting. It knows it's important. What these guys did was important.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I mean,
it was critical.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's,
yeah, surrounded in almost myth today. You know, it's still huge pop culture today, oh, yeah. Right?
Like, they are the archetypal investigative journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Woodward and Bernstein. Those are the little guys who took down a president.
I mean, just saying Watergate. Everyone has heard that word, Watergate.
And if they haven't heard that, they've heard any number, yeah, of stupid thing that they've just thrown gate to the end.
Sexting gate. You know, you'll watch your local news.
Deflate gate.
Yeah, deflate gate. Yeah, exactly. You use gate at the end of it, and that means that's the new word for expose.
Or scandal.
It's synonymous with journalism doing uncovering something unseemly or very uncouth or something that was behind hidden doors that did not want to be pulled out into the light.
Something that's supposed to be devastating.
Yeah.
Like it's...
And because they've overused it, though, it's kind of lost its power.
Well, absolutely.
Bigly Gate?
Russia Gate will be the next one. Russia Gate.
I'd say Putin Gate would probably be catchier.
That sounds like a Canadian dish.
Putin Gate?
Poutine Gate.
Yeah, Poutine.
Poutine Gate? Yeah. But yeah. But overall, I thought those were just nice, consistent themes as far as showing the process of everything. But I also really enjoy cop dramas and the procedural qualities of that. So I think that's why I really did enjoy both Spotlight and All the President's Men. I think I enjoyed Spotlight a little bit more, probably because it had more of a modern uptick. They didn't favor wides as much. But at the same time, All the President's Men seemed much more true to life and true to heart. And I think that's what they were really going after. It wasn't as... in terms of, you know, sexy kind of thing. I mean, it's just like, you can't get so sexy with both those movies, but I thought like Spotlight was much more visually appealing and they were more cross-cutting with their editing and there was more intrigue, whereas with the characters, the characters carried it more than the plot, whereas the plot, you were kind of watching like, how did this happen? And you're kind of watching this like, this fuse burn, I feel like, with All the President's Men, whereas Spotlight was about these characters with the fuse.
Remember that All the President's Men, like we were saying, was filmed 2 years after the fact, right? 2 years after
that,
right? It was filmed like this was fresh,
yeah,
right? So handle with care.
Nixon
right?
was like, still flying away in the helicopter when they dropped this.
He like looked at the poster already. He's like, "Oh, come on!"
So it was, yeah, it was recent. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, like where Spotlight was kind of a story. I mean, it's recent for sure,
yeah,
but not that recent. It's like, and it's
14-15 years,
right? And it's a story that's like, yeah, we all heard, but we didn't quite know exactly what had happened.
It's still shocking.
Yeah, whereas like you know, All the President's Men, people have been obviously been bogged down for the past 3 some years, you know, every day on the new, you know, it's like, it's in everyone's mind for sure.
And so another difference between the two, and I think why you felt a little bit less emotionally involved, Coop, was All the President's Men purposefully unsexy, and there's really no victim on screen.
That's true.
It just follows the journalists.
It just follows the journalists, whereas the journalists in Spotlight, they have to deal with the actual humans.
There's like collateral around it. There's
an actual, yeah, emotional cost. There's the cost of lives. They talk often about the suicides that have occurred because of this.
There's people actual track marks on their arm, you know, like they're drug addicts, and they're the lucky ones that are still alive, right?
It's more emotional in just about every way.
You're not alive, you're tortured, or you're dead. You're either living with being tortured with this mental scar, or
where a heroin addict is considered one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
Whereas in All the President's Men, the victims in that we see are just, or I'm not gonna say just, but they're people that feel threatened to speak out. Like they'll be not necessarily be harmed, but they'll be fired, or they'll be prosecuted or something. Blacklisted or something.
They're working as staffers. They're you know, people who know about this going on, but they don't want to ruin their whole livelihood, even if they do want to speak out about these crimes that were committed. But the crimes weren't particularly violent, they're just corrupt.
Big difference.
Yeah, big difference there.
Yeah, and I think it kind of getting to a little bit of a conclusion that it's important that the Fourth Estate needs to stay both credible and you know, adversarial versus these large systems that are potentially oppressive to the people. And that, like how I was saying a little bit earlier, you know, that's just, you know, my own perspective, that for the people, for people in general, from local news to national, that journalism is the tool for us to actually have freedom, for us to actually have our opportunity to breathe in that regard, that systems of oppression can't crop up. And if they do, that they'll have, you know, Spotlight pointed at them and dragged out into the light where they don't want to be, and essentially be shunned, shamed, and torn to pieces.
They are the only source of knowledge for us to hold representatives accountable in a democracy. If we didn't have that sort of journalism, then you would have no idea what's actually happening behind the closed doors inside a session of Congress.
Right.
Unless you're going to sit down and watch hours and hours of C-SPAN, which maybe in this alternate universe I'm talking about, they don't even have cameras in there.
Right.
It's just so integral to a democracy. And today it almost feels like we're at kind of, I don't know if we're at a turning point.
It's a crossroads. Yeah, for sure.
I feel like we're too close to it to even accurately judge it. Like, things feel like they're changing though.
No, they do, for sure. Well, I mean, okay. So yeah, how it relates to today, these two movies, just quickly before we get to our, recommendations, which I know you guys are excited to hear. but yeah, so like All the President's Men, I think the clear connection is Watergate and what's happening in the news with Russia and the hacking and the election, regardless of facts or validity of the accusations. We're in kind of this, like, you know, fervent, like,
quagmire.
We're in this possibly irresponsibly corrupt time in a way.
Right.
It could go one of two ways. It could be nothing. It could be moderately corrupt. It could be all sorts of corrupt.
Right.
And at the same time that is happening, all of the sources who we trust, like the Washington Post, the people who broke the Watergate scandal, are being undermined.
Their credibility. Exactly. That's the big difference from back then and now, is the credibility of the journalists doing the investigations is under attack. Well, now, you can argue unfairly or not.
Well, they were being attacked. There's the one scene in All the President's Men where they're being attacked.
Same tactics, actually.
Yeah, same tactics.
Without saying fake news, he practically said, they say biased, right? Or something along
that
lines.
Yeah, they're political operatives. Right. That they're not the idealistic, apolitical people that we want them to be.
And we're talking about Nixon's PR, not Trump's right now. But it's saying
that's
that.
Hard to figure out.
That's hard to figure out because it's very similar, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of relatability there, right?
They're trying to create gray areas where really there shouldn't be any.
Mm-hmm.
And you could put blame on both political PR and in a way on, I think, on some of these agencies themselves, because we're in a clickbait.
As in media.
As in media, yeah, right. Like agencies and media. We're in this.
And that's how the network, how we mentioned earlier, kind of relates to this, where it's like, you know,
once you put that entertainment value in.
Yeah, once news organizations are fighting for ratings to survive, where before, you know, the suggestion was your news organization in your network was going to lose money and you just had to accept that because of the integrity of getting news out to the people.
Exactly that.
But then obviously you get like an arms race of, well, once I start getting put a little entertainment in here to get more ratings, people watching mine, well, now everyone has to do it. And now we've just completely isolated different parties and deepened divisions between people, you know, in their own echo chambers. I mean, we can discuss this. It's a thing that
you talk about forever.
We can talk about forever, and it's been discussed a lot. But so, these movies absolutely relate to that. And seeking truth and the ideal and virtues of.
Well, if I could go honest, on just a little moment of a diatribe, something that I respect so much about the people in Spotlight and All the President's Men, and what we talked about with those characters, is they've got the long game in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, it's like every single news cycle, every single day, we've got another gotcha moment.
Mm-hmm.
We've caught somebody in a lie. Yeah. We could see what he said now or see what he tweeted now. Instead of this idea of like...
Anthony Weiner.
Yeah. Instead of this Weiner idea gate. Of like having your actual sights on the truth,
mm-hmm.
on the instead picture. Of
the Bernie Madoffs,
the hard hitting journalism.
You can't not be the, as not interested. The rating
hitting journalism. Yeah. You're wanting the ones that make a change.
So what would you say in summation with all these movies and like what you guys have learned, like what would you guys say in like in closing, like ultimately, like how important is journalism and how important is it that movies like this keep getting made?
Well, I don't think I know nearly enough or am eloquent enough to express how absolutely integral this kind of journalism is. I just know the warm, fuzzy feeling I get when I watch these two movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're so fantastic, and I love them for representing the best side, the possibilities of journalism, of truth, of diligence and perseverance in the face of overwhelming odds. It's just got all of these things wrapped up in it that make me giddy.
Well, I think I can attest to that as well.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, well, then, I mean, ultimately, so watch All the President's Men, watch also Spotlight, and below in the information, if you're listening to this on YouTube or anywhere else, we'll put some other good journalism films that we didn't have the opportunity to talk about. But like we always do, we always like talk about recommendations. So the recommendation that I would have would be a Netflix, its original series. It's called Imperial Dream. It's about this African-American guy who got out of prison. He has a son, and he is in the ghetto, and it's all about the struggles that impoverished black communities suffer and just poor people in general suffer with the system working against them and not for them. And I've only seen one episode, but honestly, it was eye-opening and captivating with interesting characters. I'm super excited to see where the show is going to go in general. And how we were talking about previously, how Netflix is now getting into that stage of mass media, and it's getting harder and harder to find good Netflix original content in general. Like Netflix just used to be before they made original content. And I would say one of the shining bits would be definitely Imperial Dream. I'd highly recommend it.
I haven't seen it.
Well, we're going to watch it.
Okay.
How about you, Neil? What's your recommendation this
week? What's on your plate?
Oh, my plate?
On your plate.
Well, I'm doing, this is completely unrelated also to our discussion, but a documentary that we saw recently called Rats.
The Research and Uncovering of Truth of Rats. Journalism.
There you go. Yeah, journalism. But it's Morgan Spurlock's newest film. Same guy that did Super Size Me, if you don't know who that is. And it's basically just talking about the infestation our planet has with rats and how we're never going to get rid of them. It's a little bit of doom and gloom and showing how smart rats are and how we basically have no way to fight them.
Terrifying.
It honestly is. No, and it's a documentary, awesome, very eye-opening and surprising. Edited in a purposefully almost like a horror, but it's a documentary. But mm-hmm. like it's like there's so many bass drops and stuff in it, and
mm-hmm.
well, it's like so it's fun as well.
It's fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's like some fun camp to it. I liked it a lot. Like the exterminator that they cut back to every now and then, who's just like sitting in the warehouse on a wooden chair smoking his cigar, and he's like, "You can't kill him. You got to do it with your bare hands."
Yeah.
He was like, okay. So there was some, like, some fun like camp drama, but I thought ultimately, like, I didn't realize that rats were such a big, big problem.
I didn't either. Yeah, it was actually kind of revealing.
Yeah, I thought it was very revealing.
So yeah, rats.
Rats. Because there's an exclamation point, right? At the end?
I don't think so. I think it's just rats.
So there should have been.
Rats.
Oh, rats.
Rats. Mm. Kyle, what do you got for us? What's on your agenda to share with us?
My recommendation actually kind of goes along with the style of All the President's Men.
Okay.
It's The French Connection, William Friedkin's amazing crime drama, in my opinion. Shot very naturally, handheld. It was unlike anything a lot of people had seen yet. It had a documentary approach to it, a lot of natural light. And what is, I mean, it's an absolute classic. Hopefully you've seen it. If you haven't, then
I haven't.
This is why I'm recommending it. It's got a thrilling, absolutely thrilling chase sequence that to this day is just...
We talking bullet level chase sequence?
Or? Way better.
Whoa.
Yeah, way better.
That's a bold claim, Cut.
To me, bullet is a little too constructed. And especially once you know the backstory of how they did this chase, I mean, they are physically, with the camera in the car, barreling along the city streets, going something like 80 miles an hour. Friedkin got in the car with the stunt driver and was like, it's just not looking fast enough. The dailies are coming back. It doesn't look fast enough. We've got to actually do it. And you can feel it in the movie. And there's no music in the sequence, but he edited the sequence to a really fast-paced Santana song. The music doesn't enter at all into the film. There's no it's just this chase sequence.
Hmm.
But he had that playing like the rhythm of it in the editing room, or so the story goes.
That's so fun.
Phenomenal film. Yeah, Gene Hackman. Everybody's amazing. It's, yeah, that's my recommendation for this week.
Hmm.
Some solid recommendations, fellas. Yeah.
Solid recommendation. Well, as we come to a close, I mean, like always, guys, we really do appreciate you watching. Well, not watching, listening.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. I've thought about that with YouTube. But thanks for listening nonetheless for all the way to episode 14. I would say check us out. Previous episode, episode 13, we talked about the best films of 2016. Really give that one a listen. But like always, I've been Cooper Carr.
Kyle Montgomery.
And Neil Anderson.
Thanks a lot, guys. Give us a like, subscribe. Love you. Bye.